All right, thanks. So again, my name is Tom O'Connor, and I have no relationships to disclose. I think the previous presentations by Michael and Tish kind of laid the groundwork with some of the background on the problems of workers' compensation. So I'm going to talk to you about a website-based project called the Workers' Comp Hub that is coordinated by the National COSH, Council for Occupational Safety and Health, and NESRI, the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. So just who we are, the National COSH is the umbrella organization for the Federation of State and Local Committees or Coalitions on Occupational Safety and Health. We do education and training for workers around the country and do advocacy on worker health and safety issues. And, I missed a slide here, but NESRI is a general human rights organization, and they have an interesting approach to this issue of workers' compensation by trying to frame it as a human rights issue, that trying to put out the message that the right to health care and workers' compensation is a human rights issue. So I really appreciate that the perspective that they bring to the issue. So the context, I think all of you know, the 3 million injuries and some 4,500 fatalities each year. Injured and ill workers desperately need medical care and lost wages. And 30 years of so-called reform have, in more cases than not, hurt workers as business and industry has attempted to chip away at workers' rights to benefits, trying to cut back on benefits, trying to remove in many states the ability to choose your own doctor. So this is really actually had a negative effect on workers' rights to compensation. And I think any of you who have worked with injured workers know that they are in many ways damaged in not just in financially and in their health, but psychologically as well, as they have feel like they've been abused by the system in so many ways. And so it has a huge mental health as well as physical health impact. So the goals of this project are to try to create a central collection of resources for injured and ill workers, and to create a platform where people can share ideas and strategies and discussions about how we can improve the workers' compensation system, make sure that it works for workers, and to try to bring together sort of diverse constituencies, the academic policy experts, injured workers, organizers, and advocates, all in one virtual place to share these ideas. So just a quick overview of the site. This is the homepage here shows what the purpose of the site is, and has some updates on the front page with some experts in the field providing blogs on recent developments in the field. There's state-specific information in the resource section called Navigating the System, which is, I think, is sort of the heart of the whole site, where it's a pretty impressive collection, I have to say, and I don't take any credit for this. This is really done by Joey Choudhury at NESRI, where she gathered information from every single comp system in every state so that if you are an injured worker and you want to find out what you need to know in your state, since every state is different, you can go on here to this map and click on the state, and it'll pop up with a series of links to information. So if you click on the Massachusetts icon on the map, then you'll find these various reports, including a report by MassCosh on fatalities in Massachusetts. You'll find various fact sheets, manuals, guidebooks, and a variety of really useful resources, and also the link to the state agency. So I was really impressed that they were able to get together this information for all 50 states, and at a minimum the link to the state agency that has the information that an injured worker would need to know. There's also a resource library that is has several different categories of resources, some of which are more of general interest, articles of general interest to the general public, and some are more academic. So there's some news articles and some sort of general interest articles. There's these types of academic articles that somebody who is more in wanting to get into the more of the data can find some good references. There's also fact sheets for worker training. There's this whole resource library on, it's not entirely on workers' comp, but some other issues as well. And then, as I mentioned, there are updates from the field from experts in the workers' comp arena that we've managed to get some of the best experts, some of whom are present here at this conference, on some of the current issues on workers' comp that we need to be knowing about. There's also a quarterly newsletter that's edited by Jim Ellenberger, who many of you know was for a long time the AFL-CIO's point person on workers' comp and probably knows these issues better than anybody and has done a great job of pulling together all the materials for these quarterly newsletters. And there's also a section on advocacy. And since the title of this session sort of leads to this question, is, you know, it's one thing to create a website that just has information and resources, but it's another question of whether this can really link to advocacy efforts and try to help build advocacy for stronger workers' comp systems to protect injured workers. So the advocacy section has a number of advocacy and education tools that advocates can use. It also has some events like our National Worker Health and Safety Conference coming up in December. Just let me know if you're interested in more information about that. So some of the challenges that we have encountered as we've thought about how this can work effectively, and I know that all of you have deal with this issue, you know, frustrated by this all the time, but the fact that there are, you know, problems with the comp system all over the country, but comp law is set by the state legislature. So you have to fight a state-by-state battle to try to change things, but the problems are the same everywhere. And so the business and industry lobbies are constantly attacking at the state level, and, you know, what resources do we have to be able to carry on those fights at the state level? It's a very difficult process. Also, as anybody who's worked with injured workers knows, trying to organize them in effective sort of self-advocacy groups is very difficult. You know, as I mentioned before, they are in many cases people who have suffered in many ways, financially, psychologically, physically. They're really angry in many cases. They're angry at their doctors. They're angry at their attorneys. They're angry at anybody around them. And that's trying to channel that anger into something productive to get people engaged in organizations that can help push for changes. It can be done, but I can say from personal experience, it's a really hard thing to do. And there have been relatively few examples of successful injured worker organizing for a lot of reasons. So that's a big challenge. And obviously a website alone is not enough to create or to spawn a movement for workers' comp reform. It has to be linked to grassroots activism, and that's sort of the biggest challenge that we have faced with this. So there's those challenges, and there's also some just sort of questions practically about whether we'll be able to continue this project over a long term. It's one thing to get everything up on a website initially, and it's a big, you know, initial effort, but then keeping it up to date, getting people engaged and providing current material, making sure that all those links, all these 50 state links are still accurate, that's a big job. So somebody has to make a commitment to keeping that maintained and current. And, you know, can this be effective in building a grassroots activist movement for workers' comp reform? That's the big question that we still have hanging out there. And we have been working to link with worker advocates and worker centers and the few injured worker groups that do exist out there to try to make this useful as a tool for activism. But that still is an open question whether that's going to be successful. And then there's just the overall question about how workers' comp activism fits in with the broader health and safety movement. And, you know, I think we in the OSH field have always had some kind of mixed feelings about this. And, you know, our job is to prevent people from getting injured or ill on the job, right? So sometimes we feel like, well, workers' comp, that's another issue. That's something, you know, people have already been injured. There's nothing we can do about that. So we, you know, there's often been a tension there. And, you know, to what extent do we use our resources to promote, you know, better compensation and better treatment for people who have been injured already is a little, it's a different focus from the preventive aspect of health and safety that most of us really try to focus on and make sure that people don't get injured in the first place. So that's kind of another big question that we have to deal with. So that's basically all I had. I just wanted to offer to acknowledge that Joey Choudhury, who many of you know, is the person who was really behind this whole project, and she's the one who submitted this abstract. And for personal reasons, she left the country and was not able to be here. But she's the one who really deserves credit for putting this all together. So I wanted to thank her, and we welcome any of your comments and questions.
Folks, what I'd like to suggest is, as you're asking Tom questions, I'm going to go ahead and distribute the eval, and then I'd also like to ask our other speakers to come on up and have a seat to make sure that we really utilize this precious 10 minutes, because a lot of, I think, synergy has been generated here today, and we want to be able to bring it all back. So, Tom, if you could accept some questions, and then by all means, ask questions of the rest of the panelists as well.
Yeah, and I would say feel free to ask the rest of the panel questions right now if you have very burning questions for them. Yeah, Nancy. That's a great question. I mean, I think that we've tapped into them for resources, but I think that we need to get them more engaged in this in order to, because that, you're absolutely right. At the state level, they are absolutely the ones leading those fights. Yeah.
The second thing is just theoretically, in various states' worker comp statutes, there's some language about non-discrimination. You can't discriminate against workers for exercising their rights. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, there could be a link between using that language to try to block some of these employer practices, policies, and programs that are discouraging the reporting of injuries and illnesses. So I would like to see some talk about that, looking at the different statutes and seeing if there's a place to go in test cases.
So I'll be. All right, that's a great suggestion. All right, thanks, Nancy. Yeah, Matt.
Under the Affordable Care Act and the AOCs that are going to be created, we have an economic interest on their part to see that these things get triaged as the appropriate payer. But we've got a strategy yet to take advantage of that. And in fact, at the present time, while I understand that the Catholic Church is eliminating the limbo, limbo still exists for these workers. People are falling into it. And people not know that the Catholic
great question. Who wants to take that on?
I can talk a little bit about it. First of all, you know, Massachusetts is kind of a laboratory for healthcare reform, and Mann did look at the influence of the universal, where 98% access to care and insured in Massachusetts. And Mann did an initial study looking at the impact of this on workers' compensation. And what it looks like is that initially it has shifted more. Decreased utilization of workers' compensation because workers now have access to general health insurance. So I think the immediate impact of universal care is to shift away from workers' comp. But as accountable care organizations come into play, what's anticipated is going to shift claims back onto workers' compensation insurance. The issue of trying to get people outraged about this, I mean, for years we've talked about cost shifting. But I think the workers' compensation medical bill is only 4% of the overall medical bill in this country. And so historically, we have not been able to mobilize people. But I think my experience in Massachusetts, as things get tighter and tighter and tighter, and they're getting tighter every single day, that there is room to start really focusing on cost shifting. But I think getting the workers' compensation data into the all-payer claim databases really might be a mechanism for highlighting some of these issues. So that's kind of how we're thinking about it so far.
Anybody else? This question is primarily for Leticia. I'm wondering if in the survey,
No, we didn't ask that. I mean, we didn't, that wasn't, that didn't even come up in our questioning, so I don't have an answer to that. So.
Anybody else?
So I was just wondering if, with the website, if you used any, like there's all these diagnostic programs now that you can look at, you know, how many hits you get and where it comes from and how long people stay on different sub-pages. And have you guys done that
just
yet?
Just starting to do that.
Yeah,
so
that
don't.
Really
yeah, yeah. So I think that would be a good next step. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I think it's sort of physicians exiting the system, I think, have come in waves. And I think the initial, and it had to do with a different implementation of different stages of the reform process. So the first wave was when they changed the forms. They changed the basic reporting forms that people had to do. A bunch of doctors seemed to exit. The next thing was they instituted the medical treatment guidelines. Again, doctors exited. And then third was about a year and a half ago, they implemented a required method for assessing permanency and disability. And I think a lot of docs exited after that too. So yeah, I think it's directly in relation to those increased hassles of an already very painful system for docs. And then, but on the other hand, what New York State is doing, they're now in about the second or third month now, they have embarked on a big, they call it business process reengineering kind of process, which is looking at trying to act actually, supposedly, on some of these issues to improve the process for injured workers and for physicians. So for the next 7 months, they're doing this is a pretty big process that, you know, I'm not sure how it originated politically, I'm not sure really what its intent is, but that's ostensibly what its aim is. So I guess we'll see then, you know, whether there are some ideas that they have for addressing the specific, you know, paperwork and administrative kind of hassle kind of thing.
I'm kind of curious, of the four who aren't on the panel, how many of you were familiar with the workers' comp talk before your presentation? Yeah, two or and the rest of the room, how many people?
You repeat the question.
How many people were familiar with the work of Tom before you heard this presentation? So, Tom, what's being done to...
We got a ways to go.
Yeah. good observation. What's being done to disseminate information about this important resource?
Yeah. We mainly work through our Protecting Workers listserv and through the various professional associations and connections we have and trying to make presentations like this, but you know, we're open to other ideas. It's obviously we need to do more. Jonathan?
I just wanted to say one of the uses of the hub is it saved us a lot of time doing the literature review of this. The issue of the importance of this area of work, you know, one is it connects unions and advocates to the injured worker, and you can learn about the conditions that gave rise, the unsafe, unhealthy conditions that gave rise to the event. You know, another thing is that, you know, it's the canary syndrome. When somebody's injured or hurt, you get the attention of union officials and company officials, and you're able to maybe get something going where you might not be able to in the absence of the, you know, injury or fatality or whatever it may be. I also think that as unionists, we have an obligation to represent our members, not only when they're on the job, but when they're injured. And what I've found is that it really builds the credibility of the union when the members see that when they're in this terrible condition, injured, in pain, off the job, losing money, that the union is the one that's, standing up and trying to help them with this terrible workers' compensation system, and also helping them to try to prevent these injuries from happening to co-workers. So I think the linkage is really strong, and it's a real gap, nationally that we need to address, throughout the COPS movement and the labor unions.
Now, Laura Stock from LOHP Berkeley, and just in response to that, I want to say for many years we had a program at LOHP called the Workers' Comp Navigator Program, which was specifically to train union activists around health and safety, how to set up an effective advocacy-based workers' comp program within their union to provide that support. And in addition to the things that you said, another issue was that injured workers, of course, felt very abandoned by the union. That was a very typical comment that we had. And also part of the discussions we would have is how valuable injured workers were for any of the campaigns that unions were conducting. They were often very isolated, they were at home, of course they were motivated to do prevention activities, and that was part of the actions we tried to promote in engaging injured workers in not just workers' comp campaigns, but general workers' campaigns through the union. So it's a really untapped opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mary Miller from Washington State. People are, at least in Washington, you may be protected from discrimination for filing a claim, but you have no right to a job. Your job is not protected once you're receiving workers' comp benefits. If you qualify with FMLA, which is another double-edged sword, you are protected, but now you're being dinged under your FMLA, your lost work time injury. So, I just had this conversation with workers on the phone a lot about this kind of thing. They really have no job protection unless they're actually fired for filing a claim, not for being out of work due to this work-related injury or any other personal health problem in that matter. So I don't know if that's a barrier to filing a claim.
Yeah, definitely. I
just want to make a comment on electronic health records and our experience working with Cambridge Health Alliance. First of all, it was really interesting. We did debriefing interviews, and the registration staff loved asking the question about occupation. It was their high point of the day, was competing over who got the best job for the day. So, I think that's like a quality of work-like issue for our medical staff, and it was really, they were very enthusiastic about asking the question. The receptivity on the part of the providers in the Cambridge Health Alliance has been unbelievable. They love this data. And, figuring out how to use it, Laura, I think we have done some. My dream is, hospitals have to do community health needs assessments to qualify for Medicare and Medicaid funding, CMS funding. And think of a community health needs assessment that has occupation in it. And this isn't even, we haven't even linked the occupation with the health data. This is just occupation alone is really providing information. So that's my dream, is a community health needs assessment with occupational information as a model for what should be done. And I think there's potential if we can build occupation into the electronic health record.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all of our panelists who are very provocative and stimulating.